This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Great. Well, welcome to this podcast on how to build your brand and litigation support in your organization and industry. I'm here with Adi Elliott from Epic, who is VP of Market Planning. My name is Carolyn Anger. I am Manager of Litigation Support and eDiscovery at Stikeman Elliott. And we wanted to put this podcast together to talk about understanding practical steps that you can use to build your brand in litigation and in the process, how to possibly advance your career. I'm going to turn it over to Adi to introduce himself before we get started.
Thanks, Carolyn. So, yeah, I got into the industry via a company called Kekira, joined that when it was about 20 people, a little bit less than that, and started in marketing and really built the marketing team there. And then when I joined, we were like less than 20. When I left, I think we were 500 or 600. And then went to Iris Data Services, and where we really focused on managed services, marketing, product, and training there, and then Epic now. And now we've merged with DTI, and the whole thing is called Epic. And a lot of brands there, and a lot of change along the way. And that was this whole thing was my introduction to litigation support, although that was like a decade ago now.
Okay, well, I mean, I come from a different area, same industry. My career evolved through IT, where I was working with various law firms and eventually got more into the niche area of litigation support. That was around 15 or more years ago. And for the last 10 years, I've been managing processes and projects and a team here at Stikeman Elliott. So, all right, so why don't we dive into it? Let's get started and talk about some branding.
Yeah.
All right, so, I mean, you are the expert. You're all about branding. When people ask you, you know, what do you mean when you say your brand or my brand, what does that mean to you?
I'd say the easiest way I think about it is what people say about you when you're not around. Like that's the brand that you have when you're not watching them and they're not doing it for you. What are the words that come out of their mouth and how do they describe you? When do they bring you up and why do they bring you up? That essentially becomes your brand, and it becomes an aggregate of a lot of experiences that people have. And I think the same thing is true of companies, by the way. It's just that we experience it with people all the time because we're always bringing people up. Like we might talk about our boss or our romantic partner or a friend of ours. And in a way, we're talking about those people's brands every step of the way, at least our perception of their brand and our take at their brand.
Yeah, it's what is the image that you portray or what's the impression that you portray, or what's the impression that people have of you, what's in their minds when they meet you for the first time or as they get to know you, and like what's the message that you're saying. All of these things, you know, portray your identity and, you know, and the brand that you're putting out there.
And I think a lot of times when people think about like personal brand, sometimes the perception of that might be kind of cynical. Like we shouldn't think about such things, and it's a very businessy and fake sort of thing. When in reality, I think it's just putting business and kind of academic words around what do people think of you, and what do groups of people together in aggregate think of you. And frankly, just from a self-awareness standpoint, I think that's a really positive thing for people to think about in general. What do you want people to think of you? What do you want the perception of you to be? And how do you bridge a gap? Because I think a lot of people find out one way or another that the brand they think they have and the brand they actually have are very different things. And there comes an honesty with yourself that you got to have if you really want to bridge that gap and work at it, because sometimes you might just be object to it and kind of ignore those sorts of details. But those impressions are honest and they're all data in an aggregate. They can influence your career a lot, because if there's a if you want to be known for a certain thing, or if the, your brand is, and what people think of you in shorthand is different than what you want it to be, or even something that, that you're completely surprised by, either embracing that new thing or figuring out how to bridge that gap is pretty important.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think one word that, that comes to mind, you know, based on all of the things that, that you just said is be genuine, right? Like know yourself, know thyself, and, you know, understand what are your strengths and what are your weaknesses and, you know, how can you put those things together to, you know, build your own brand and become something that is really truly you.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I would, in some ways, I would think about building a personal brand as figuring out the things about you that, that let's say stand out the most and that you're the, that, that you really do naturally, and doubling down on those a lot and getting data to extend that. And by data, I mean, if you're going to put something on a LinkedIn profile on Twitter, do it through a lens of that. And, but it's really about developing a muscle within yourself that one, you like that about yourself, and two, that you do fairly naturally. Like if you, cause it's really hard to build a brand. Like if you look at Steve Jobs and say, oh, I want to be like that. I want to be this, this amazing product person, but you don't really, or whatever you perceive Steve Jobs to be, but you don't have a bunch of things about yourself naturally that does that, nor do you enjoy the sorts of things that lead to that, then it might be a problem. You might want to find something else to think about with yourself that you can double down on, because really consistency and focus is the key no matter what, but you have to like it. If you're not, because you, you'll never be authentic about it if you don't actually enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this, Carolyn.
Yeah.
I have a question for you. What do you think how do you think your brand has evolved over time?
I mean, I think my brand has evolved over time as, well, one, as I have grown in the industry from, you know, that IT person 20 years ago to, you know, the expert that I am now. And through that process, for me, I've consistently looked for areas where a need was required, and then, you know, through either internally through my organization where I was working, or, you know, externally through a community, tried to fill that need or try to help to fill that need in some way. And I've also, following my career throughout the years, I have taken advantage of opportunities that have come my way, whether or not I thought it was a good opportunity at the time. Sometimes I really didn't even know, but I took it. I mean, I'm a person who went to school and studied creative writing and liberal arts. And then, you know, in 1999, you know, jumped on the Y2K tech support bandwagon and got pretty heavily into computers, which was not anything that I thought I would be doing. I thought I would be writing books and teaching and whatnot at that time. And so I've allowed my brand to sort of organically grow over the years through opportunities that, that came to me. And I sort of a couple of times took risks and, you know, and went with them. And for me, it ended up being very successful.
You know, that's really interesting. And a point that I'd make about this is, even if you don't consciously try and build a brand, the world's just going to do it for you. That's why it's better to just figure it out for yourself. Because, and like, for instance, people are going to take the path of least resistance on brands. I bet there was a time, like just going back to your early journey, where literally your brand within an organization might have been, she's in IT. Like when people thought of you in the very beginning, when you're a fairly blank slate. And then over time, especially noticing how your career developed, it might have been, she's in IT, but she can talk to people. Because they have this idea of IT is people that, the brand of IT sometimes is not super communicative. And again, is everybody like that? No, but that's definitely a general perception and almost like a brand of IT. And as you stand out over and over again against a perception that they have, that's in a way how you redefine your brand and make it easier for them. But in the beginning, the brand is, in a way, whatever your position is, that you just kind of inherit that as your brand. If you're an attorney, then your brand is an attorney. And then if you're an attorney that works in e-discovery, then it just becomes an attorney that works in e-discovery. And because people are always just looking to put you in a bucket, because it just makes it easier for them. People aren't looking for nuance early on, but as you give it to them over time, that's a way to develop your brand. And for you, like solving complex problems, continually delivering for people when there was tons of ambiguity, that I mean, in a way, the story of your career probably is part of your brand in and of itself.
Absolutely. And throughout, you know, that process, along each step of the way, maybe not every step, but you or I became like a quote unquote, a go-to person, right? Where they're back in 1999, when everyone wanted to replace their computer because their BIOS was going to show 1950 or whatever on January 1st, 2000, I became this go-to person to replace all these machines, because I was working in a financial institution at the time, and everyone, you know, we were all afraid that the day would come and these computers wouldn't boot up. Turned out they would boot up, they just wouldn't show the right date. But I became that go-to person, and I think that helps people to build their brands, whether or not they know it, right? You are working in an organization, and if someone's looking for a specialized marketing campaign and they want someone to speak to innovation in the industry, then they're gonna call Adi, right? Because that's you're the go-to person for that. You know, I mean, I've seen you speaking at a number of conferences on a panel or with Chris Dale, like giving your input and your thoughts on trends and changes and sort of the state of the union of the universe, because you are that go-to person.
And part of that, yeah, for me over time, it was that I like thinking about that stuff. And at first, I would say something that I found over time, because it wasn't obviously in the beginning, something that I thought of. I was doing it all my life, but I didn't think of it, like even in grade school, high school, I'd be thinking about technology and where are things going and doing essentially versions of what I'm doing today, although it not being a job and without me realizing that some of those parts are a job or that it was useful in business. But the point about that that's really interesting is, in some ways, choosing to take control of your narrative, I mean, I'd say that's another way to define branding, is about breaking out of the box that people are going to put you in. Because like I said earlier, you have a brand no matter what. And it could be kind of blonde vanilla and just based on like a fact that people don't like, it is in IT, is an attorney, is paralegal. And there's just not much there besides that, or how people feel when they interact with you. But if you break out of that box, that's when you're top of mind when something else happens. And if someone's listening to this podcast, I'd say by definition, they probably care a bit about going above and beyond and figuring out how to further themselves, because there's a whole swath of people that they're not going to break out. They're not going to try and differentiate. They're going to punch the clock and that's fine for them. And they're not going to be working hard to say, well, how do I get beyond this? And how do I get to the next thing? And what is my trajectory? But if you are thinking about that, then part of it is you have to stand out somehow. And a brand is a big tailwind for that, because that's where, if somebody needs something, like you said, you're top of mind, and that creates the space for the next opportunity.
Right. And there's a number of ways that people can do that, and quite organically, and by using a number of resources that are out there and that are free for them to use to help build their brands. What they really need to do if they want to take their brand to the next level is think about, what is the value that you bring? You know, what are your strengths? What are things that you want people to know about you? What are some other things that people should think about if they want to take their brand to the next level and really put some shape to it and get it out there?
I think part of it is consistency. If you're going to figure out what these things are, then after it's defined, to have a consistent narrative around it. And I mean, if This is, if you define it a certain way, put it on LinkedIn, put it on Twitter, put it in your email. And I'll give a personal example. One of the things that I think over time that defines my brand, or at least I hope defines my brand in some way, is authenticity. And mm-hmm. I've thought a lot about how do I push that, or how do I make sure I'm being authentic all the time. Like, so a little thing that I do is I purposely communicate in more casual spoken language in emails. Like when I'm writing emails, I try to never sound businessy or formal. I will use emojis in emails. And one, because I think it's fun and light and I just enjoy it. So that's the part of it that it lines up with what I want to do. And two, I think it has an air of it's a way to communicate that I think actually emotionally works better sometimes than words alone. Like it can get an emotional tone across, but I think it adds to this authenticity. And I think it works on a level. I'll give you another one. My LinkedIn profile is purposely not a businessy picture. Like it's mm-hmm. it's a nice picture, but it's one that I like, but it was from my personal life. And even the like, and that's a thing to know about me. Like I think that adds up to an overall story. Cause I used to have one with me in a suit and a tie and everything. And the one that they probably use when I go speak at stuff. But I also think you don't get the vibe of me anywhere near as well. And I want people to have the vibe of me, because if anyone has me speak at a thing or they're going to hire me for a job, they should know what I'm about. And part of it is that general tone. I don't know. Do you do stuff like, do you ever that consciously think about things like that too?
I do. I think more along the lines of myself being an extension of my employer. So I do tend to keep my social media, my work-related social media anyways, very conservative. And, you know, I do have my work photo on my LinkedIn, and my Twitter is a little bit mixed for sure. But I do tend to keep my LinkedIn pretty straight in terms of content and my photo. But I think that's what LinkedIn is for. There's not a lot of fun and playfulness and
agreed.
And whimsy on LinkedIn, right?
Although it feels like LinkedIn's trying to push that. Like, have you got lately all those birthday notifications, which I somehow appreciate, but it just feels awkward to say happy birthday to somebody on LinkedIn.
It does. I know. I had actually, it's a setting that you have to turn off. And I think it maybe automatically is set to on and you've got to go turn it off, because a couple of years ago I had it turned on and I was getting these, you know, like 400 birthday wishes from, you know, half the people that I didn't even know they were. It's just sort of industry people that I'd sort of acquainted with. So I turned it off. But, you know, then I see that pop up in my feed as well from time to time. And I don't know. I mean, maybe people want the attention, or maybe they really don't know that's actually a setting that's turned on.
I didn't realize it. I think LinkedIn likes the engagement. You know, something interesting of the note between us there. Yeah, I've evolved over time, or at least like I've somewhat shifted the nature of my social media, I would say, because mm-hmm. I would say I veer far more into my personal life and just what I mean is personal thoughts and where what I'm thinking these days now than I ever would have 10 years ago. And I think a couple things, like one, I do have this rule that of generally just never being negative, just period on mm-hmm. social media, because that's like an easy thing that you're not going to, because I think social media is like, somebody once said it's like a hand grenade. Like on one hand, you can like, or like a bomb of some sort, you can like mine for gold with it and do useful things. You can get stuff via blowing things up, but you can also like blow yourself up. And I think mm-hmm. one way to avoid that in social media is just never being negative. As long as you are never directly negative on Twitter and you can put an opinion out there, but make sure it's generally a positive looking opinion. I just found myself doing that more. And I think for me, part of it was after I was at Relativity, then KKira, I was more, because I'd been with one company a long time, I thought of it as an extension of myself. And then once I went to Iris, I started to think of myself as more separate. And like once I had that first separation, and now at Epic, I think of at least my social media as more individualistically me. Although LinkedIn, besides my picture, it's just straight business. And I'd say I probably don't It's just basically, like most people, it's, you know, it's what you've done, except for that picture is the one like thing that I let of like the authenticity vibe, because the rest of it is just essentially boilerplate that they can use at a conference or something. When people say, hey, you get a conference. And I was like, hey, it's on LinkedIn. You can just strip that babble over there and take it. Do you use different platforms differently? Is your Twitter versus your LinkedIn versus your, are you, how tight, how consistent are you across all of them, or are you, or versus Facebook?
Well, I actually recently deleted my Facebook. So I'm not on Facebook anymore. And I actually, it's deleted, not just disabled.
I'm impressed you figured out how to do that. So congrats.
Yeah, no, it's, just Google it. There's just a few steps. It takes 15 days, but then they purge it. But LinkedIn, I mainly use for business and to just keep in touch with when people move to different positions. And then it's interesting to see who, you know, tries to connect with you, or connecting with people that I've met at conferences and events and through different organizations like ILTA. So it's pretty general sort of, I think it's like online networking, really, LinkedIn. I mean, I feel like LinkedIn itself also gets a bit confused about what it is from time to time.
Agreed.
There's a whole ton of people on LinkedIn that never use it, never use the application. So, but I do like it in terms of, you know, just staying in touch with people in the industry. And there's some good reading content and notifications about conferences and things like that, that pop up. So it's good for that. Twitter, I have my Twitter feed curated to include like e-discovery, sort of general, a lot of generally technology and innovation, artificial intelligence, machine learning, and then technology, new technology, very specific to Canada, because there's quite a lot of tech incubation and innovative stuff happening in Toronto and in Canada right now. So that's a big part of my feed. And I have a little bit of fun stuff, lots of cat videos and things like that that make me smile. And then there's, you know, I have a little bit of political stuff that I follow too, but I actually have it curated quite well that there's not a lot of negativity in my feed, as I know, you know, Twitter can be like a cesspool of
it can get you down if you're in the wrong
right.
Twitter.
Right. If you follow the wrong tweet, you could be, you know, really depressed and in need of those cat videos. Yeah. So you know, you can really make it specialized to you if you spend some time doing that. So Twitter, I think, is probably the best mix of like me sort of rounded out, you know, and then in terms of like my brand on Twitter, I'm completely comfortable with sharing my personal side with the internet through that kind of forum. But I try to tweet at least once a day, sometimes many more times than once a day, like an article that I've read or about an event coming up involved in, well, in ILTA. So I tweet a lot of the ILTA stuff that's going on. I'm involved with Women in eDiscovery, so I tweet about those events. I'm involved with Sedona Canada, so I tweet about Sedona, and also I'm a member of the EDI and EDRM through Duke University. So, you know, those are some of the accounts that I follow and tend to retweet, as well as the software developers in our industry and the vendors in our industry that I work with and that I think produce good content. A lot of the vendors produce, you know, really good content, articles and webinars and things. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff that I like to tweet through and to get out there to share with other people, to help them build their knowledge and just have access and to what's out there. I think we're really lucky in our industry. We have a lot of very, very smart people in our industry, companies who produce amazing content, and people are quite willing to share information freely, you know, about how to do things and how to not do things. And I think it's, you know, it's important to pass that information along.
I'll give a shout out to Savannah Aaron from Epic from Epic's marketing team. She makes a lot of great content and does great work. So as one of those service providers, I think I appreciate what our marketing team does. I think they're awesome. You know what's interesting? There's like a tension in branding in that you almost have to push boundaries a little. Maybe that's not the not exactly the way to think of it, but it's almost like you got to stand out somehow. And if you, because sometimes people go really broad with it and they think, oh, I'll define my personal brand by, and then they'll just pick some corner that there's literally 100,000 people on already. And you see this right. on Instagram all the time when everybody wants to be like, essentially, I'll say Kim Kardashian is one easy example, but someone wants to be, I'm going to do pictures of food. I'm going to do pictures of me at the beach. And you see this professionally too, where people stake out a corner that's already just so busy and so dominated that to try and own a brand or to try and develop a brand in that space is very difficult because there's so many people doing it well and there's so much energy where, and from my perspective, it's much easier to go to a place that is a little less dense and densely populated with people. And that stands out more, but that's also uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable because you think, well, wait a second, if people were already thinking like this, I like this thing, I'm into this thing. If people are already like, wouldn't there be already be a ton of people there? Which the truth is some people just haven't thought of it yet. And that's your opportunity. And I think in our industry, I see that all the time, especially sometimes with companies, because everyone, I'll give you a for instance that we run into as a company is everyone says their people are the best. People hire us for their people. And we ask our clients people hire us for people. And I'm sure Stipend's the same way. But how do you stand out by saying your people are best, but everyone thinks their people are best? It becomes like this, well, wait a second. Everyone else says their people are the number one thing too. So how do you, I don't know. And there's not really an answer there. There is, but it's difficult when you're trying to put forward a message that is everyone else's message.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I think it's difficult for a vendor to measure how great their people are because you're not necessarily able to say, oh, we worked on this file and it went to court and it won, right? Yeah. Like you do see like the case studies and the metrics on speed and, you know, things like that people are able to share. Whereas, you know, in a law firm, you have like, okay, Stipend is ranked, you know, in the top whatever 10 law firms in Canada. We've closed this many deals and with this amount of money. Like it's something that is measurable and is also public information, right? Some of it is anyway. So there's a way to measure that. Whereas I think for the industry, for the kind of company that you work in, it's not so hard to say, to prove why your people are the best.
And we definitely think we can, although it becomes, you go to like 10 websites in the industry and you're going to see a similar message. But to take that home and to kind of land that for people thinking about their careers, standing out is part of the whole key. And for instance, here's something that I would say, if somebody is super into crochet and they're just really good at it, put that out there. Let people know, feel free to, because if it's your passion anyway, and you really love it, and that's both personally and a little bit professionally how I think about Twitter. Like my Twitter is dominated by the things that I'm into. So like NBA and data visualization, that's a place of Twitter that I'm at. I'm following pretty closely everything and I retweet and all this stuff I follow closely and retweet, and that's all my conversations. A lot of stuff that's going on with the Me Too movement and how we're coming to grips with all that is something that I'm following closely on Twitter. And eDiscovery, of course, and there's some people that I dig there. But in general, what in some ways the opportunity is, if I'm kind of plugging into what I'm really into, it gives other people an opportunity to see me as other than just my job. Because in some ways, that's like building that brand is about elevating yourself beyond the box that everyone's going to put you in. Like, and being, giving people some other reason to think about you and being seen as a three-dimensional person. Like, because that's really, do you want to be seen as a more representative version of who you are? And in non-cynical way, I'll say from a positivity, from a optimistic standpoint, kind of being the best person you are, or like trying to be the best person you are. Because if you're, if you're deciding that these things are what you want to be your brand and you really love those things, then, and if you're consciously thinking about it, then you can double down on that and put that out there more. And the more you put that out there, the more people will connect to it. Like in every big and small, people will see little things that you're doing and bring it back, as opposed to like, there could be this thing about like the crochet thing or whatever it is. If they don't know that, then they can't connect to it. They can't ask you about it. Standing out though is scary. Like that's the thing, is part of it is you need to stand out, but that's also the thing that people are kind of scared of, is standing out. So it's very counterintuitive. Do you ever have that tension?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it can be putting yourself in a bit of a vulnerable position if you say, okay, how do I put it out there that I'm an interesting person, right? Like, what do I want to share with my followers to help them get to know me better and to provide a little bit more information about me that people may not know?
It's vulnerable is a great word, because that's, in some ways, it's about being vulnerable. And we all kind of, I think, sometimes go back to high school and this kind of in our heads of like, oh man, if I put out there that I was like a world-class into crochet, someone might think that's weird, or that I'm weird, or that they might think less of me. And like in high school, if someone found that out, they'd be like, crochet, really? But in reality, I found that the vast majority of the time, if you're being enthusiastic and authentic, whatever that means to you, and putting out there the thing, like, people are on your side. Like, everybody wants you to win. And when somebody sees somebody else being vulnerable or being authentic, their general reaction is to connect to it. Like, the general reaction, I think, is to think that's a good thing, and to plug into it, to think positively of it. And counterintuitively, when people have walls and are standoffish, it gets perceived negatively, even though people think they're being careful. And that's where like our instincts in terms of building a brand can sometimes serve us wrong.
Absolutely. You have to put yourself out there. And if you don't know what that means, and I mean, I know for me, I like to write lists. So if I'm ever stuck on something and I don't know what to do, I'll have my sort of pros and cons list of things. Like, I'll typically just start writing about something. I am a writer too, so just to help clear my head and figure out which way I want to go with something, I'll start writing and sort of not stop and not really think too much about what I'm writing, just sort of get it out there. Once I get to the end of the page, then I've got some clarity, you know, on what it is that I'm trying to portray, whether it's in an article or through a presentation. That's sort of my method for figuring things out.
When did you first start thinking about your personal brand, or how did you even become aware? Because I think there's a kind of tipping point of it, or a, whoa, that's a thing. What was the kind of awakening that you had on that?
It was only a couple of years ago when I remember it was actually at ILTACON, because I said to you, I want to build a personal brand. How do I do it? Because I really had no idea. And you were like, well, what's your brand? And I said, well, I don't know, technology? Like, I had no idea. But it got me to thinking about what I wanted my brand to be, just in terms of my purpose was to be more, make myself more aware or more out there in my community in Toronto and Canada, you know, as a go-to person for specific things. For example, I'm really involved in pro bono on electronic courts and setting up electronic trials and electronic filing. I've done a lot of work over the years, and that's all sort of outside of Steichman Elliott. I mean, some of it is pro bono through Steichman Elliott, but some of it is through the courts. And so I just wanted to try to put some substance behind that on how could I be valuable in that space, because it was sort of a little bit outside of the e-discovery space, but I had been sort of drawn into it and really enjoyed it. So it just, you know, it made me, I had to really spend time thinking about what would my brand be, because I really had no idea.
That's one. That's absolutely hilarious that it came from. I remember the conversation, but when you asked me to do this podcast, I didn't connect the two at all. I was like, oh, that'll be fun. So that's kind of hilarious that it stemmed from a many years ago conversation that we had in some way. Something that, though, that is really important point there that I would emphasize to people is, one, once you kind of figure out a place you want to get into and start to make a part of your brand, go do it and get the data, like have tangible accomplishments in that area. But two, tell your story. Because I think sometimes people just think that I'm just going to go out there and do this stuff and everyone will see it. Like the world will just, we're like, I'm ready. So I've done it. So now everyone will just see it. But in reality, everyone's kind of the hero of their own story. So, and not because in a negative way, but just we're all going and we're all doing ourselves. People love narratives, and humans are narrative animals, which is why the Odyssey didn't have to be written down for so long, and yet it still survived as a story. It's like good stories just travel; they're viral. People will talk about them. But your own story, get the data so there's meat behind it, but tell it. Put it out there on LinkedIn. Talk about it on Twitter. Like, and don't be obnoxious about it. Obviously, don't make it like don't go overboard. But if you're feeling it and you're like have thoughts on it, that you do need to put it out there. People, I would say they generally, most people maybe err on the side of not going out there. Now you definitely see people who go way too far the other way. And I think in your head, if you think who's somebody that's going way too far on a weird topic, you can already, people will have ideas in their head of who it is, but you know where that line is on too far, but you do have to tell your story. And I even mean like to your boss, to people at work, to Twitter, to LinkedIn. Like craft the narrative and have data behind it, because once there's tangible stuff, once people have data and it's not just a, hey, I like this, but, and I did X and Y and Z, that starts to really be your brand, especially wrapped up in a story.
Mm-hmm. And how long do you think the story should be? I mean, obviously it needs to be concise and expressive. Is it 140 characters or...
Yeah.
Three paragraphs. I mean, I think probably short, like to get at your sort of your core story.
I would say all of the above.
Probably better.
Yeah, because here's what I would say. And this is how kind of a lot of presentations I give, I approach the same way. Almost every presentation I give, I could give it in 5 minutes. I could give it in 20. I could give it in an hour. Like, and anything in between. And I would say your own story needs to be kind of the similar idea. To where if you're just talking, and if it's authentic, it will be, because the words will come out of your mouth fairly naturally, and you'll figure out how to dial it into the right audience. But you know, on that like blurb on LinkedIn, it's a paragraph. Like it's a paragraph that someone might use if you're going to be on a panel or if they just want to get a very quick overview. But the story, if you're at a cocktail party, like, and this is kind of the sniff test on, is it a good narrative? If you're at a cocktail party, it'll be a back and forth thing where you talk a little bit about what it is, and maybe they ask some questions about it, and then you talk more and more, and that's a longer version of the story, but it's still your story. And that's where I think, I always use the cocktail party examples of, are you just brushing by somebody that you haven't seen in a while and giving them the quick update? Are you in a deeper conversation about it? If whatever you're trying to convey works at a cocktail party, then it works. And if it doesn't, like when you're all just social and you know, you might have a glass of wine in your hand, so everyone's open to each other and they're willing to engage. If it works there at any length, then it works. And if it doesn't work there or doesn't come across, then you don't have the story dialed in yet, because a good, like the story of you should work to people anywhere all the time. And it should just be, again, a good story with some data in there.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I was doing some Googling over the weekend to prepare for this podcast, and I stumbled over a site that I thought had a really neat idea. And it was, when you're identifying your brand, sort of a quick way to get at the essence of it would be to write a haiku.
That's awesome.
About what you think your brand is. So
that's a great
so I wrote one.
You did? Oh my
yeah.
God.
Yeah, I did.
Can you read it?
Of course. So, okay.
I'm excited.
So this is my like first cut at it and just thinking about my brand as it is now. Mm-hmm. The haiku format, 17 syllables, 5-7-5. So identify need, process by understanding, provide clarity.
Oh my God, that's so good. I love it.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a fun exercise because it really helps you think of these like action words that are pithy, right?
Yeah.
Like you want to try to provide a short sort of feeling from the three lines. And I mean, I would continue. I think I will do this as an exercise sort of maybe daily or every 2 days just to continue to write these haikus because it helps you really, I found it really helpful as an exercise just to sort of make me focus in on what is it, like what is the value that I'm want to provide? How can I stand out on my own? And for me, you know, I try to identify where there are holes in processes and, you know, then how can I understand what that need is and what the requirements are and what the audience, people who will eventually receive the product, what is their understanding of what they need. And then in the end, it's also like providing clarity, like the transparency on this is what I did and this is how I did it. And, you know, this is why it helps.
Thinking about like, you can kind of view your career through that lens too. Like everything that you described of where you started and where you ended up was the story of that. And that like you being the person that in a way, the go-to person for doing exactly that about an escalating series of more complicated things.
Yeah, exactly. I will soon be publishing my book of haikus escalating, you know, how my career has developed over the last 15 or 20 years.
Here's like you naturally from the IT world to where, how would you define where your career is now? Because you have your hand in a lot of pots.
Yeah, I am a leader as well as a team player. Mainly, I mean, I'm a problem solver.
Yep.
That's what I do, like all day, solve problems. I mean, I think that's what eDiscovery is, right? It's solving problems, providing results, being transparent, and, you know, educating people along the way.
You know, what's really interesting, and you did this naturally, I think this is, if someone's listening to this and they're really serious, and hopefully we give them some stuff, some tidbits along the way, but if you want to do this, writing stuff down, defining what it is, and particularly in haiku, but other ways as well, it's important to write it down of how you see it. Because the exercise of writing is so, like, is one, it's really hard and kind of annoying sometimes. And it's cool that you pick one that forces you into clarity and density.
Format.
Yeah, the format. Mm-hmm. But I think people sometimes just think about this stuff and then move on with a thought in their head without ever writing it out and think, oh, I've got it. And it's amazing how, if you don't write it down, how the thought isn't as clear as you thought. As soon as you try and write it, all of a sudden, it just forces so much more clarity of thought and so much more precision and out of you. And it helps you. That I have found the process of writing, that journey alone helps you clarify your thought. And it's something as big as is defining your brand, which is really kind of another way to think of it. It's your North Star. Like, what am I trying to trend towards? And what am I driving at? Not from necessarily a destination, like I want this job, but who am I as a person? What do I want to be defined by? Writing that down is so clarifying and just kind of even, it gives you something to measure against. Am I doing this over time? Am I building more data that matches up to that thing that I wrote down?
Absolutely.
It's funny that you did it naturally.
Yes. Yeah, it can be like very cathartic too, writing things down and can get you to a place too where you may actually realize that it's something that you might not want to do.
I think that's right. Really
or
important.
It evolves too. It could take you into something else, you know, very naturally and organically.
I think that's an important, and this is a hard thing for people in general, is you might have an idealized version of what you want to do, or may see someone else and say, I want to be like that, but that's not actually your strength. And I think writing down can help to see it in black and white and see if you really like it, not when you're just saying, I want to be like Ted Koppel or whatever, like when you're not putting a person out there, but when you're actually defining here is what I want my brand to be and how I want to think about myself. And two, I would say getting feedback from people, if you're going to define your brand, I would say, and it, again, this is a vulnerability thing, but and this is coming from a person who's okay putting themselves out there like this, but I would say ask people like, hey, what do you think my brand is? And what do you think people think of me? And now again, you're going to get a colored answer because almost it's like the Heisenberg principle, like you're looking at it. So by definition, they're not going to give you negative feedback. So you're not going to hear like the downsides, but you can kind of parse it. Although, and you can kind of read between the lines on some of it, but I would say asking other people for an outside perspective and forcing, like I'd even say, hey, what do you think I'm not good at? What do you think for me? Like, what do you think Adi's not interested in, not good at? When do you find me annoying? Like, that's another question that, and because you're giving them the space and kind of making it funny, but you're letting them answer it. I would say things like that. And I mean, 360 reviews inside of organizations are always helpful, even though like you get the feedback. So if you're just like, oh my God, that's how people see me. Like, because even though they could say 17 positive things, if they say one negative thing, then that's always what we tune into. But
exactly, yeah.
But here's what I would say. For all of the things that you get back, those negatives are almost always the flip side of a positive. Like it's totally a yin and yang, and it's just taking the energy of it and trying to keep it on the positive side. Because if people think you're a domineering person who doesn't let them talk, well, it also means that you can communicate really well in a lot of ways, and that kind of communication, you need to dial it in and make it more of a surgical instrument than a blunt instrument. But there's a positivity in that too.
Yeah, you need to, if someone said that to me, I would take it and turn it around and say, okay, I need to listen more. So then you actively try not to speak as much during meetings if you are the type of person that tends to dominate, and sit back and listen. And really, I think for people who do that, they would be surprised by how much more they learn by not talking at all, you know, and letting other people talk and then chiming in only when absolutely needed.
And asking a lot of questions. Like you learn so much. It's worthwhile, and ask a lot. Like and think of, I've even as an exercise said, I'm going to ask at least 3 questions on this topic because I know I'm curious about the topic. And I want to hold myself back and force myself to dig in and think about it. And if I go into something saying I'm going to ask questions, then that makes me listen in a different way. If I'm putting this constraint on myself that I need to ask good questions, and I'm like, all right, what am I really curious about? And I'm active listening to like dig in deeper, which people value, I think.
Absolutely. I think that's a really good point. In terms of also putting yourself out there and letting people see the kinds of questions that you're interested in. I know for me, when I'm in like a large meeting or at conference or in any kind of forum where there is the ability to say something or to ask a question, I will always say something or ask a question, at least one thing, just to put it out there that I'm interested. I think particularly inside an organization, I mean, like I work in a very big law firm. I go to some meetings with a whole large group of people. Many of the people I don't know because there's so many people in this firm and it's a very large corporate firm and I work in litigation. And whether we're having a CLE presentation on something, I think is important to always raise your hand and contribute. But get your name out there. It shows people that you're engaged and it may strike up a conversation between you and someone that you didn't know before. You may
That's
learn
such
something
a good
new.
Point. And here's the thing. People are terrified of that. Like, and you can see it in when there's like a panel at almost every conference I'm at, when they go, hey, does anyone have any questions? That big weird pause where no one's saying anything and nobody wants to be the first and everyone's scared of raising their hand. Like that is that moment to put yourself out there. And in a lot of ways, that's, I would call that like a branding opportunity insofar as if you were going to ask a question, I would say that first question is the best one because one, the panelists will love you for it because it's great. Like, cause it's awkward for the panelists when you're sitting there and they say, is there any questions? And it's just blank. And two, everyone else, you're giving everyone else license to ask more questions and people will remember your question unless somebody goes really off the rails with the question more than any others. So that's an opportunity where you can really dig in on something that you're curious about that if you're curious, everyone else probably is too, by the way, like, or at least enough people and they're just scared to ask.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's a great thing to do and easy to do, you know, and once you do it once, the first time is hard, but then like anything else, like with practice, it gets easier every single time.
How do you walk the line for yourself? Because I would say we're both people that are, I'll say openly opinionated, like we put our opinions out there and in different ways, but we definitely do it. How do you walk the line of, let's say, not controversy, but like taking a kind of orthogonal opinion or an unexpected opinion without it blowing up on you and without it turning into some controversy that's not a good thing?
It's a good question. And I think it's important, absolutely, in terms of a personal brand and social media and, you know, what you say internally at your organization and, you know, what you say externally. I mean, I try to be sensitive and like diplomatic about things. I try to say things that if I am being potentially controversial about something, before I would say it, I would just sort of reflect myself to make sure, okay, is this something that I firmly believe and based on my values, I may offend other people by saying this, but I would never knowingly put something out there that I thought would offend other people. But I mean, let's be honest, that bar is pretty low nowadays. I mean, yep. You can't say much without offending somebody. I mean, I myself am a fairly open-minded person and am sensitive to other people while sitting within the boundaries of my own existence. No, I think you just have to be, you have to be smart about it. And then I think you have to consider who your audience is. You know, I'm not going to put something on LinkedIn that I might put on Twitter, right? Like I may respond to something on Twitter, which is a fairly casual medium and limited amount of characters. And you're responding to other people's thoughts on things. Likewise on LinkedIn, it's a little bit more of a formal medium for communicating opinions and information. So I think that's sort of the more conservative side. I would tend to be a bit more edgy on Twitter, either just maybe disagreeing and like not starting a fight, but presenting my opinion and then maybe getting into a back and forth with somebody else in that forum. Whereas then, you know, I'm on Instagram too. And, you know, so Instagram is more my personal private place where I would put things on Instagram that I, you know, wouldn't put on Twitter and yep. would definitely not put on LinkedIn because it's just more fun and whimsy. And here's a picture of my cat and here's the steak that I ate last night. And here's a picture of me at the beach, you know, like it's really just fluff.
But fun.
So, I mean, yeah, I don't know if that like necessarily answers the walking the line. I guess at the end of the day, I actually do try not to be too controversial on Twitter and definitely not on LinkedIn, mostly just because I feel like that bar for upsetting someone else is very low nowadays. And I just don't have the time or inclination to get into a needless back and forth with somebody else.
Yeah, same with in a one-on-one situation, I'd say I'm trying to be careful with that. And I'd say for me, it's a similar thing. There's a few like tactics though that I've actually lately started developing because I think, because part of my thing is how do you disagree with people in a productive way? And that's something that's gotten harder. And I think maybe my perception is it's getting harder, but Like, one, how do you create space for friction and space for disagreement? Either in public, like sometimes on Twitter, or even in a meeting with a bunch of people. Because I would say another big place where you're defining your brand is when you're in a meeting with many people. You don't realize it, but that's like social media. Because like, if you're not a Kardashian, then the same number of people may actually have seen you in a meeting as saw one of your tweets. Like, it could just be that, because unless everyone's looking at their deluge of Twitter at the same time, it might only be that 15 people saw that tweet. And it could turn out that the 15 people in that meeting, though, are far bigger, more influential for your career and for your trajectory. And and that's like, meetings are almost like social media, because there's such an impact that it can have. And I would say something that I've started doing, is, one, when I disagree with somebody, rather than just disagreeing, I stole this tactic from this guy, Ezra Klein. He's a writer for this website, Vox, which is a very liberal website, which like, they're very policy centric. So it's kind of interesting to me to at least see their take on things. But he has a podcast that's really good, and he interviews a lot of people. And I've noticed when he disagrees with people, he goes, before he actually just starts disagreeing, he goes, well, I want to push back on that idea a little bit and see if we can define it more. Or he just says, I am going to disagree. Like, I'm going to push back. Let me push back on that idea a little bit. And I've found that saying that, like just that putting out there that you're going to disagree now, and almost like it becomes less personal and it becomes easier for the other person. And I've even found, like, and this sounds weird, but saying, like, or putting caveats out there. And I do this on Twitter sometimes too, like when I'm quoting somebody or when I'm disagreeing in a reply, I'll say, I'm not so sure, what about, and then ask it as a question, because how it's received, like, I want to get this thought out there, or I want to ask a question, or I want to challenge somebody or disagree because I have a different perspective. But our instinct is to do it in very like harsh terms, kind of, because it comes out of your mouth. And I found that creating the space, like doing some, just a little bit ahead of time to give them almost like it provides what you're saying kind of a cushion. And all of a sudden it can be talked about and thought about differently, but the thing can be listened to more. And that's where it gets back to your brand. All of a sudden people can hear the exact same thought, but if you say, well, I'm going to push back on that a little bit, or I'm not so sure, what about, all of a sudden people are like, well, oh, they're not so sure. Let me tune in here. Because so much of it is
and you're
tone.
Creating more of a space that's like comfortable for asking questions and maybe even saying, look, I don't know what the answer is, but here's what I think, and I want to hear what other people think. Being more, I think, collaborative about it and listening is certainly a better way to be than right in someone's face, as people can be with their opinions.
You know, it's funny.
Twitter.
Yeah, like, because Twitter Twitter can be just such a harsh place for disagreement. And I would even abstract that up a layer and say, like, the public sphere in general has been a place where brands are defined by the edges and almost by, I don't know, fringe is probably not the right word, but like is clear and almost like severe a take as you can have on something. And it's almost like there's no hot takes anymore, because just all the takes are hot. So if hot is a relative term, then they're all just kind of room temperature takes, but they're just pretty vicious in and of themselves. And they're right in the branding on, yes, you can define yourself really well. Like, build a wall is a great way to define a brand, 100%. Like, if you say build a wall, then people, it's really clear and concise. On the other hand, it doesn't create much space. And in our personal lives, when we're thinking about our personal brands, we mostly need to also create a positive space for ourselves to be heard, because it's hard, like, it worked, because we're talking about our careers here. People aren't going to largely won't rally around like severe kind of caustic takes of things. And even, and people don't think about this, but people sometimes take disagreements very personally. So you have to think about, on one hand, to build your brand, you kind of have to stand out, and you do have to disagree and be, I don't want to say a squeaky wheel, but you have to go against the grain sometimes, or say something that, because if you're just agreeing with everybody all the time, then you have no brand. Your brand is, I agree with everything. But
But
on the other hand, you got to do it in a way that people can hear and feel and can take in and ultimately agree with. Like, because you got to create the space for the agreement where I think in the public sphere, strangely, Well, because it's a one-way conversation, so there's not a real conversation happening there, we see like more and more and more of the extreme with no space for debate. But we, mm-hmm. yeah, it's really important to almost overcreate that space or overestimate. It's hard to overestimate other people's emotions. Let's just say that. Like hard to, you can't overdo sensitivity to other people, like saying, hey, because disagreeing with someone, one of the hardest things is disagreeing in a meeting with somebody. Like if it's a whole bunch of people mm-hmm. and maybe your boss is there and you're going to take a line against somebody because now you're going to feel judged by everybody. But then that person's going to feel disagreed with. So you're building your brand, and I'm using this term, I don't mean it cynically, but I mean by definition, that's a branding opportunity. But the other person, you need to be sensitive to them too, because you don't want a hard take on them. Like they want to give them space to hear what you're saying.
Yeah. And I think you can do that by listening and letting others speak and then conveying gratitude. Thank you for providing your opinion. You know, like even though we may not agree with other people, there's always an opportunity to learn something there.
Yeah. Not letting your take get in the way of either a relationship or not making people feel bad. That's why I tried to be, I endeavor to be only positive or at least opinionated without outright criticism of other people. Although in this day and age and in the nature of politics, it's hard to read stuff sometimes and not start to criticize what's happening a little bit.
All that said, we've covered a lot and we've got a lot here, and I hope people have found this podcast to be useful. Why don't we just go over some of the really easy ways that you can brand yourself? So, you know, we've got all of the social media platforms, which everybody knows about, starting a blog, right? If you've got something to say, then that's your space to write it down and share it with the world. You can easily start a blog for free through, I think, WordPress and other similar sites so that you can get your message out there. Talk about yourself, talk about your brand, and just write about topics that you're interested in. This is also how you become visible and you're enthusiastic about the work that you're doing, and inevitably will lead to you becoming an expert in your own field.
Absolutely. And take the time ahead of time to write down what you want your brand to be and ask yourself, is that differentiated? Like, if I trend towards this, will that differentiate me? Like writing it down to where then, whether it's the blog, whether it's Twitter, whether it's an email, whether it's a meeting, and frankly, your life goals, you're trending towards, hey, here's who I want to be. Here's how I would like to mm-hmm. be perceived. And you're kind of, it's important to have KPIs. So then you can start to measure yourself against it and say, am I doing this?
What's KPI?
A key performance indicator.
Okay.
Yeah. And maybe like if you're a very regimented Gantt chart style thinker, like set goals. Like, I mean, some mm-hmm. people aren't and they just want to play jazz and that's cool too. But some people like they want to write down what their brand is and say, yes, this is, I believe that this is differentiated. I like these things. I want to be known for these things. Okay. Well, what are the tangible steps you can take to get there and measure yourself against it? And, mm-hmm. and because again, I would encourage, don't think of it cynically as I'm building a brand. Think of it as like, I'm being a better person. I'm being my authentic self and I'm taking steps in my life to get to a place that I want to be. And then hopefully other people notice too. And cause I'm taking control of my narrative.
Know thyself.
Know thyself.
Share it with the world.
That should be the title of this podcast. Know thyself.
All right. With that, I think I'll say it's been amazing chatting with you and talking through how to build your brand in your litigation support industry, in your organization, even touched on your personal life. We hope that people find this helpful and that you have some takeaways, and also please leave some comments for us on what you thought.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.